Welcome to the Locked On Grizzlies podcast. My name is Sean Coleman. Hope wherever you are well and that you had a great weekend. It's the start to another great week. The weather outside is definitely getting more comfortable and just enjoyable. A lot of things going on. Baseball playoffs are in full swing. The NBA finals are in full swing. The Heat, basically pulling off a needed victory, obviously, last night. I mean, a great performance, a historic performance, legendary performance, if you would, for Jimmy Butler and Kelly Olynyk really stepping in place with a couple of prominent Heat players out of the equation in Adebayo and Dragic. But they made it a series now. The Lakers, it was a wake-up call they needed. They're probably still going to win in five or six games. The Heat certainly showed, as they have all postseason, that they are here for a reason and they are ready to play and have now made a series. Before we get into the show today, I do want to remind you, you can find the show at Locked On Grizz on Twitter, myself at StatsSAC, and you can also find the podcast wherever podcasts are available, Spotify, Stitcher, the podcast app on your iPhone, wherever you choose to listen. We also want to remind you to subscribe, review, ask questions, interact with us via Twitter or wherever it may be. Let us know if you have any questions. We want to always make sure that our content is relevant to our listeners' preferences. Also want to remind you of our title sponsor, Built Bar. If you go to BuiltBar.com right now and put in the promo code Locked On, you can get $10 off your next order. So I wanted to start a new series. A couple weeks ago, we did a series in which we talked with names around the Locked On Podcast Network, getting kind of an off-season insight into the Grizzlies' rivals. Well, now I want to focus back on the Grizzlies, and in my opinion, probably the most important group, probably the most important part of the Grizzlies roster is their backcourt. What names could be on the move? What names could we see develop? Who do we really feel is critical to the future of the Grizzlies, to the success of the Grizzlies' future when it comes to playing alongside Ja Morant? And for that, I am very happy to welcome two folks who I think are prominent names among Grizzlies media, and that's the Grizzly Bear Blues leadership, Parker Fleming and Joe Molinax. They've been on the show with us before, and we're so glad to welcome them back. Joe, how are you doing this evening?
Did you call me a prominent member of the Grizzlies media? Like, I'm blushing over here, Sean. I don't know if you can see me through the airwaves, but I'm red. I'm red like a tomato over here, you sly dog.
Well, hey, don't let it get to your head too much. But okay. I value your opinion, so we'll go with that. Parker, how are you doing tonight?
Shocked. No, I'm just shocked that somebody said something nice to me, Parker. It's very rare these days that someone's kind to me.
You know, I thought I was, like a C-lister in Grizzlies. every game I'm in the locker room, and there's Anthony Sane, Peter Edmiston. Formerly guys like Amari Sankofa and David Cobb and Chris Harrington, Jeff Call. I can just keep going, Grind City Media guys. And Sean calls me a prominent member. So that's
a prominent member.
Yeah, I'm still honestly, I was really anticipating like the, I'm still used to the Welcome to the 3&D podcast. I mean, big step for Sean.
Well, hey, the thing about it is this, is that, prominent, whatever. There are a lot of other adjectives I could throw out there.
That's a good point. You make a fair point there, sir. We probably need to move on while we have prominent floating.
Mm-hmm.
Now, more than anything, the reason why I wanted to get these guys going first is because always a pleasure to join them. Obviously, I've gotten to know them over the past few years through GBB, their great leadership over there, opportunities they both have provided me and the help they've provided me over the years. So obviously love every chance that I get to talk with them. So what we're going to do is we're going to talk about the backcourt, and it's not just De'Anthony Melton. I think there's a lot to focus on as far as this backcourt goes, with the idea in mind that we're not looking for answers to everything right now. That's kind of impossible. It's kind of hard to do with how young this roster is. But I do think that it's important to kind of look at the roster as a whole. And so, Joe, we'll start with the most prominent person of the Grizzlies' backcourt, and that's Ja Morant. Now, Ja's 21, just came off an unbelievable rookie year. One of the better rookie years that we've seen in quite a while. But the thing that comes to my mind, I still think we're a few years away from really being considered a playoff contender, being someone who could really make that title run. But the thing that also jumps out to me, if you look at recent history, when you really think about point guards, teams that have had point guards as their best player, the success that they've had, we've seen a couple get to the conference finals, but never really seen any make a finals run. Now, a big part of that is the legends that have been in the game, but they'll be getting older once Ja is there. When it comes to Ja being the true main star of a Grizzlies team leading the Grizzlies, do you feel that a title is truly within the realm of possibilities, or is there going to have to be, you know, other significant pieces that really become stars themselves to support him?
I think one of the most interesting things about this group is how much flexibility they have, right? Like, I'll agree and disagree with you on something that you just said. I think that when it comes to them being title contenders, you're exactly right. I think the middle of this decade is the window that they're shooting for. But the way that they've set themselves up, and credit to Parker, he's talked about this a lot, and he's convinced me through his writings and the way our conversations. I think they're loading up for 2021 and 2022, that season, the season after next, being a really good basketball team. I think their goal going into Jaren Jackson Jr.'s contract year is to be ready to make that ascension or that leap into the postseason. I think that they're satisfied with missing the playoffs next year, which I know you're okay with too there, Sean, in terms of getting another lottery talent. I think, and Matt Harlicka is going to be on GBB Live with us this weekend, or actually it'll go live on Friday, but he's going to talk to us about a post that he did on his Patreon page. And I've said this before, he just said it in a different way, and I liked how he said it. We've talked about how Justice Winslow, I know you asked me about John Morant, this shouldn't surprise you that I'm working around like this. Justice Winslow's acquisition, and obviously Gorgie Dieng, and all the money that was eaten up, Dion Waiters, you know, dead money contract, over $12 million on the books. The Grizzlies don't have 2020 cap space. So Fred VanVleet, Malik Beasley, Joe Harris, those guys aren't coming here. Jeremy Grant, who randomly is worth $15 million now for some reason. Those guys aren't coming to Memphis. That's probably not going to happen. They'll have the MLE, and that'll be it. But in 2021, they're going to be in a place to take advantage of people that are going to try to get in the Giannis sweepstakes. If Kawhi leaves the Clippers, Paul George leaves the Clippers, you know, there's potential for a lot of big names to be available there in that offseason. And while others are swinging for the fences for those guys, I could see Memphis going for an OG, I always mess up his name, OG Anunoby or something like that, of the Raptors, or a Duncan Robinson of the Heat. You know, I could see them making a push for those type of restricted free agents for teams that aren't going to be able to match as they bring in a superstar, because the Grizzlies already have their superstars in Ja Morant, and especially Ja, but Jaren Jackson Jr. as well. So bringing it back to the backcourt, I think that if you're asking me if Ja is good enough to be the best player on a finals team, I think he is. But I think the unique thing about Ja is while he's not LeBron James, while he's not a player like a Kevin Durant or one of these wings, a Steph Curry, I think he's kind of in a tier below that where he can be the best player on a team that's a finals team, but he needs a lot of help behind him. Like he needs, like kind of like a Jimmy Butler, to be honest with you, if we're going to use the finals teams right now. I see Ja Morant, that's kind of his ceiling, that Jimmy Butler superstar type player that needs a lot of good role players around him to get to the finals. And I think that, you know, they're set up in a way to make it possible for them to get to that point, but it's going to take time to get there and it's going to take money to get there. And that's not all going to happen in one season, like you alluded to. But long story short, I think that they do have a guy in Ja that can be the best player on a finals team, but that he's going to need a lot of help. And that's the good news is having that superstar level player already there is a good thing through the draft, because he's probably not coming to Memphis any other way.
So, Parker, we've talked about it before, and you always, the reason why I enjoy talking to you and Joe a lot is because you'll always bring up perspectives that make sense. And one of the things that I've mentioned to you before, I've told you before, you know, when you look at the point guards, Steph Curry, Kyle Lowry, Kawhi Irving, those star point guards who really are the only star point guards who have won a title, you know, in recent memory, they had that secondary piece. But you've talked about before, none of them have really had that talented shooting big that Ja has and Jaren Jackson Jr., the unicorn, obviously. So Jaren Jackson is certainly that second piece. But how important is it to complement these guys with a true elite level shooting talent that really could take them to the next level? Is it that simple? I know it's not that simple to find, but is there more to it despite just an elite shooter?
I think there is more to it. I wrote down notes of all these great topics, by the way, that you sent me. And I kind of compare that ceiling to one of like with Ja's the best player to one of like the Lob City Clippers. You know, you had like the 1A, 1B with Chris and Blake Griffin, and I think you'll have the same thing with John Jaren. But I think, and then also too, if you get that elite level shooting guard, whichever way you do it, I personally think you'll be through draft or trade, because you're not going to get an elite level shooting guard coming through in the free agency, just because, not because Memphis is this place is not a free agent destination. I think that will also change with Jaren and Ja, but also too, teams just don't let go of guys like that. I mean, we've seen it over the past decade with, you know, James Harden. We'll see it with Donovan Mitchell, CJ McCollum, guys like that. Those guys aren't going to leave their places because the teams also don't want them to leave. They played an integral part. I think it's going to happen through the draft. We've seen over the past several years where kind of that sweet spot for that complimentary shooting guard would be that late lottery. And I think that's where the Grizzlies are projected to be next season. I mean, we've seen it with right now, the recent example is like Tyler Hero, but on a larger scale, you have guys like Zach LaVine and Donovan Mitchell and Devin Booker that have come out of that late lottery in that 13-14 range. And I don't see why the Grizzlies can't find an elite level perimeter talent in next year's draft, whether it's in the top five or in the back half of the lottery. I think it's definitely possible. And that's going to be the avenue you have to do that, because as we've seen in the finals, even the Heat, they're not the Lakers. I will go ahead and say that they are not the Lakers because they do not have LeBron James, but
they don't have Anthony Davis.
Oh no, they don't even have Anthony Davis.
The Lakers have two of the best five or six players in the entire NBA.
Right. Yeah. And I think one thing that's going to be super important for this Grizzlies team that kind of projects more as a Miami Heat than a Los Angeles Lakers is having that co-creator in the backcourt, because Jimmy Butler is the engine that drives that offense, but you also have Bam Adebayo facilitating and creating for others. But also, too, one of the biggest revelations in their run, this improbable run at that, is Goran Dragic. So I think it's, to really answer the question, I kind of feel like Joe just like having to run back to the original question is, I think it's super important for this team going forward to find that secondary creator and that guy that could alleviate pressure off Ja Morant and space the floor for him as well.
So, Joe, we've heard, you know, it seems like ever since, I would say probably 1 or 2 years ago, you know, it's ever since the Grizzlies really started this rebuild, that summer of 2021, you know, Giannis and others, of course, you know, those guys are who you would love to get. But as we've stated, it's just not going to happen. But one thing that we can do with this young core, who's going to be 1 year more into their development, is there's actually multiple ways in which the Grizzlies will be able to add talent, with hopefully a very valuable lottery pick, potentially, or draft pick in general, but also, as you stated, looking kind of at that secondary tier of free agents. So when we look at the backcourt, we know shooting is a big, you know, thing that we need. You know, I've talked about it before. We'll get into that, you know, a little bit later in the show. But shooting is very important. But that secondary creator, I agree, is also important as well. So you've got the draft pick in the 2021 draft, and you've also will have room to add a prominent free agent. So do you add a shooter and a secondary creator? Is it that simple when it comes to your focuses through the draft pick and the added piece?
Not to cop out here, but I think a lot of it has to do with what happens with Justice Winslow, right? Okay. Like the concern about Justice Winslow and his health, is he a fit long-term? You know, people like to say that the Grizzlies got obliterated in the trade with Miami because Andre Iguodala and Jay Crowder and Solomon Hill are on a team that made the finals and Memphis is doing what Memphis is doing. That trade was never about this season. Never. The people are letting the bubble and the fact that the world's on fire change history. That trade was always about next season. There was really a real shot that Justice Winslow was never going to play a full role on Memphis if the pandemic had never happened. So we have no idea what this team looks like with Justice Winslow in the fold. So when I do these mock drafts and people make fun of me or give me a hard time for trading for Tobias Harris, I don't think that's actually going to happen. That's just me doing thought exercises and having fun. I think the most likely outcome is the Grizzlies going into next season, you know, aside from that mid-level exception that they have, aside from the number 40 pick, maybe they use a couple of seconds that they've earned from Dallas or the Toronto trade, and they move and get another second round pick if there's somebody they really like that falls in the second round of this year's draft. I think they've already done their free agency moves, at least their major one. They see Justice Winslow as that. And if Justice Winslow can be healthy, Justice Winslow is your secondary creator. Like, that's him. He's on the roster right now. The question is, can he be healthy? The question is, can he maintain that role alongside Ja and Jaren and be one of those elite level core types of piece that people think he can be, that he showed flashes of in Miami, but Miami decided they needed to be in win now mode and they couldn't wait for Justice Winslow anymore, which is understandable, to be honest with you. So we're in a place where when you look at the secondary creator idea, I think a lot of it comes down to Justice Winslow. If Winslow is a guy that going into that summer of 2021, you know, the time, if you know, 10 months from now, we're sitting here and we're looking at them opting into that team option and the $13 million that accompany it because Justice had a hell of a season, I'd say throw money at Duncan Robinson, his Heat teammate, or some other three-point specialist, because you'd have a starting five of Ja Morant, Duncan Robinson, Justice Winslow, Jaren Jackson Jr., and Jonas Valanciunas. And that's Valanciunas going into a contract year. So he's probably going to be motivated to get one more deal in terms of money before he goes off into his sunset, whatever that looks like as an NBA player. So to me, a lot of it hinges on what Justice Winslow does. If he can be healthy and be what he was brought to Memphis to be, then you can prioritize shooting. If he can't be that guy and you opt out of that money, then you need two things. You need that secondary facilitator, you need that scorer. And like you alluded to, you're probably not finding both of them in one superstar max level type of contract. So you got to try to pick and piece it together unless you do get that lottery pick. And I agree with Parker. In next year's draft, it's projected to be something where even if you're picking at 11 or 12, you can definitely acquire a pretty talented player that can fit next to John Jaren long term. And again, for a market like Memphis, it's all about the control of that contract, the fact that they will have restricted free agency, the fact that Jaren Jackson Jr. entering that next summer of 2022, you know, he can go sign an offer sheet with whoever the hell he wants, but Memphis can match it. You know, these are guys that are going to be around for a while, and those draft picks matter that much more for the Grizzlies because they have that control of the first 7 or 8 years of these young players' careers, trying to get them to buy into building a culture. That's how you get people to stay in Memphis, the same way Mike Conley stayed, the same way obviously they traded for Mark, but the same way Marc Gasol stayed. You know, those are two guys that were max contract lever players that chose to stay in Memphis because they were from Memphis, or they grew in Memphis. They built the Memphis Grizzlies culture and helped with Zach and Tony establishing grit and grind. You need to give Ja and Jaren that same kind of access if you want them to stick around. And that only comes from years and investment and kind of putting down roots in a place. And that's going to have to really be the focus, is getting these guys to buy into building something bigger and doing it together. And that doesn't happen through free agency. You get the pieces that complement those guys in free agency. The draft is where you get your climate builders, your culture developing types of talent.
We're going to take our first break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about we're talking about the summer of 2021, but obviously we do have another year before then. So going to talk with Parker and Joe about seeing some development going on next season and how that could impact the near and long-term future for the Grizzlies. Something likely all of us would like to do is incorporate healthy habits to our daily routine. It's just hard right now with the stress and rigors of life, especially considering this year. There's always a lot going on, so it's just tough to find the time. But I may have a solution for you, and that's Built Bar. Built Bar is a great way to incorporate just a small daily habit that can offer a lot of health benefits. It's the protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. Usually, you have to trade one for the other, taste for health or health for taste. But with Built Bar, you get both. You could have it in the morning for breakfast. You could have it before or after a workout. Maybe in the afternoon when you're relaxing, listening to your favorite Locked On Podcast Network show. But the great thing about Built Bar is that it's versatile. There's a lot of different flavors. For me, it's the peanut butter and cookies and cream. And you can go to BuiltBar.com right now and choose the flavor that you might like. But the great thing is you can also go to BuiltBar.com, and when you put in your first order or put in your next order for Built Bars, you get $10 off using the promo code Locked On. That's $10 off the promo code using the promo code Locked On. But I can tell you this, when you order it and you make it a part of your daily routine, it won't be your last. I think that if you make Built Bar a part of your daily routine, you'll want it to last, and it'll be a great way for you to add health to your day. Again, go to BuiltBar.com, use the promo code LOCKEDON, and get $10 off your next order of Built Bar while supplies last. So, Parker, I want to start with you on the topic of, we've talked about Ja, but now let's talk about the other players that are there. And, you know, someone that me and you have, you know, in good fun, had difference of opinion and so on, is Dylan Brooks. And we talk about the shooting. We talk about, you know, when you compared the Grizzlies to the Heat, and one thing about the Heat that stands out is so many different quality shooters, so many different quality shooting options that they have in their depth that they've acquired in many different ways. You know, I don't know if Dylan Brooks becomes that, but when you look at Dylan Brooks and you look at his role with this team, we talked about, is he a starter versus a sixth man? But in general, I feel that there is a good basis when it comes to his shooting ability and decision-making. Do you have the faith when it comes to his play next year that he really could mold himself into being a more quality shooter and decision-maker with whatever role he takes on?
You could have just said, do you have faith in Dylan Brooks? And I would have said yes. I mean, I do. I really do. And I think it's not a coincidence that he played some of his best basketball alongside Jay Crowder and then alongside Jaren Jackson Jr. when he was at his peak powers. I mean, everyone talks about that two-month stretch that Dylan had. That's just crazy, and probably the reason he got a contract extension. But at that time, Jaren Jackson Jr. was on fire too. And it just comes down to this one thing with Dylan. The more talent you have around him, the less you're relying on him. And that's apparent because, I mean, Kyle Anderson's not going to shoot. Neither is D'Anthony Melton. So when those shots open up, Dylan's going to take them. So then you get a guy like Justice Winslow who has the ball in his hands more often. If he has the ball in his hands, he's probably looking for Ja and Jaren a lot more. And then you also have a guy who has a decent shot volume. It's better than Kyle Anderson or D'Anthony Melton. He probably shoot about 10 shots a game, three or four threes a game. And I think that would help Dylan's quality of shots improve because he can find better looks and not have to create off the dribble for himself. And he was a good catch and shoot three-point shooter. He's about like 40% from as a catch and shoot three-point shooter. And I will say, I do think his best role is the sixth man. And I think he's, at least for right now, as his team is molding an identity, I think he's an important piece into that because he's a dog. He's going to fight all 48 minutes. I mean, as we've seen, even in his bad games, his temperament doesn't change. And that's something that we've always had a problem with on the wings, whether it was Rudy Gay or Jeff Green. If there was an off night, good luck. They're checked out. Dylan Brooks won't check out. And I think having a guy that's going to fight all 48 minutes and play his ass off on both ends, it's super important.
Joe, I had mentioned in a piece that I did today, I talked about DeLone Wright and Tyus Jones. And, you know, we'll talk about Tyus in the third segment. But one thing that I had mentioned that I felt played into the decision when it comes to Tyus Jones and DeLone Wright is that I think when the Grizzlies acquired D'Anthony Melton or when he was on their radar, they felt through him that they could replicate DeLone Wright's skill set through him more than they could somebody else on the roster in the shape of Tyus Jones. Now we come to the same scenario with D'Anthony Melton, in which we're looking at him at restricted free agency. We have all talked about a potential sign and trade. Do you feel that there's a similar opportunity there? I know you wrote a piece about it. You said $30 million, you'd be comfortable with that because there's a lot of flexibility there. But with John Conger, for instance, in the equation for the Grizzlies, do you think that plays a factor in there? How big of a role do you think that plays a factor in the fact that, you know, hey, if Melton, even if he is there at a discount, we can still trade him for future assets because we feel we can replicate what he offered with other players already in the fold?
It's really hard to let a 22-year-old wing who's had success walk away for nothing. I really struggle with that. The difference between Melton and DeLon Wright at the most fundamental level is age. You know, DeLon Wright was entering his, you know, restricted free agency. He was almost 27 years old. You know, D'Anthony Melton's here. He's 22. I think he has room for improvement. I think he's going to improve. His free throw percentage is not so bad that it makes you think that he's not going to be able to grow as a three-point shooter. He may never be Duncan Robinson, or he probably won't ever be a player of that caliber when it comes to shooting the three, but I think he's going to get better there. And if I was Memphis, I would not let Melton, within reason, if Atlanta comes and offers him a $15 million a year contract, then you help him pack his stuff and you shake his hand and say, that's phenomenal, good for you. But Memphis shouldn't pay him that much money. I think that if you're looking at using Melton in a sign and trade, it obviously needs to be worth your while, a couple of second round picks at the very least. But I also believe that you have to make sure that you know what comes next, because you don't want to take a massive step backwards and regress. There's a scenario, and we've all talked about this before, where the Grizzlies are a better basketball team next year than they were this year, and they still don't make the playoffs. Like, with Golden State coming back to power, more than likely, with, you know, obviously continued improvement from teams like the Pelicans, the Suns, obviously the Trailblazers aren't necessarily going anywhere. Dallas is only going to get better. You know, I don't necessarily see this Grizzlies team making the playoffs next season, and they could still be a lottery team, even though they're better and they're still progressing in their rebuild. And I know, I believe, Sean, that you would probably think that's their best case scenario, that they're, you know, they're not blowing anything up, they're not giving up anything of value, but they're still not in the postseason and they still have a lottery opportunity. And I think I agree with that. And I would imagine that the front office does too. You don't let an asset, and again, I know we talk about these players like they're not real people. I get that they're human beings, but at the end of the day, this is a business too. And you're looking at your organization and you're saying, this is an asset that we can use to acquire more assets if we'd like, or we can sign him to a reasonable deal. Like I said, if the Lakers, for example, because the Lakers, scary enough, could have the full MLE at their disposal, and Melton is from the LA area. So say they sign Melton to a full MLE contract. That means that he can obviously sign it, but Memphis has the opportunity to match. And if I was them, I would, because that's a tradable guy. You could trade De'Anthony Melton for something else if it's within reason in terms of his contract. That's a valuable guy to have on your roster. I'm not sure that you can say that John Conchar for sure is going to be a close to the level of NBA player that I know De'Anthony Melton is. I know that Grayson Allen had a phenomenal bubble, and you can argue that he was doing pretty well in the regular season too. But at the same time, I think we have allowed the bubble to an extent to distort reality. You know, eventually we're going to go back to a world where you're playing in NBA arenas, you're traveling, you know, you're not in an empty gym at Disneyland or Disney World. And there's going to be kind of a change back to what was. And I saw De'Anthony Melton be an ideal running mate at times alongside Ja Morant and Tyus Jones, given the way that he plays the game. So as long as it's within reason, like I said, it's hard to let a player that I've seen play at a very high level before the world was essentially on fire. It makes a lot of sense to me to keep that guy in the fold within reason. And I think that mid-level exception line around $9.25 million is the line that you need to retain that guy's services, because he has a skill set that is valuable in terms of his defense, his ability to play on the perimeter, his ability to run and fit what they're trying to do, while at the same time still being so young that he fits that Grizzlies window of being successful, and he can be a key cog in a role player mentality and situation if he gets that opportunity with Memphis again.
So, Parker, we're coming off a summer, the summer of 2019, and one of the things that kind of is a bit of a letdown, you know, and I don't want to really necessarily say a letdown, but maybe to the casual fan, I guess that's a way of putting it. But this summer with our roster already in place, you're definitely not going to get, you know, the frequency of moves that we saw in the summer of 2019. But, of course, there's speculation always out there, and we've seen names like Zach LaVine, Victor Oladipo, Buddy Hield, in situations where it makes sense for them to be moved. But the thing about it is so you sign Melton, and you've got De'Anthony Melton for 3 years and $30 million. You've got Dylan Brooks for 3 years and $30 million. Yes, they're both good players. They both could be good six-man type players, and those salaries are reasonable for that. But having both of them paid that much going forward, it seems like that it's unlikely they'll both be here for the extent of that. what would you rather have? Do you feel there's a scenario that makes sense to use one of them this year to go out and get that level of player like a Levine, Hield, or Oladipo? Or is it much more beneficial for the Grizzlies to keep Melton and Brooks as potential trade chips going into 2021 to get creative with this front office with all the fallout that will come from that?
Honestly, well, for one with Melton, I just want to see if he's on the roster first. I've heard too many talks of north of $10 million annually for D'Anthony Melton. And whether that's true or not, especially with the uncertain cap situation going into this offseason, I don't want to count in D'Anthony Melton as a potential trade chip yet until we see what is his value or his contract comes out to be and if the Grizzlies match or not. But as far as that core of Levine, Hield, and Oladipo, I'm just not exactly sold. Now, I'm going to do another plug for Matt Herlicka. And he used the examples of signing like Malik Beasley and Fred VanVleet hypothetically with that cap space that they would have had they not made the Winslow trade. But if you trade for Hield or Oladipo or Levine, your team's pretty set for the 2021, 2022, and maybe even beyond because you lost a little bit of flexibility. And I don't see any of those players being the type of players that you really need to complete the end goal of winning a championship. To be honest, I would rather hoard assets a little bit and wait until the next wave of trade demands come through, whether it's a Devin Booker or Donovan Mitchell or CJ McCollum or Karl Anthony Towns, you know, players of that caliber, because I mean, for one, this wave of trade block guys, I just don't find it enticing really. And two, I would rather be in a situation like the Toronto Raptors where you're already there. You're already a 50 to 50, 55 win team every year. And you just need one more guy and you strike and you win a championship. I think if you trade for a guy like Hield, Oladipo, or Levine, you're just capped out at being the sixth seed next season, and you don't have much room for improvement. Oh, and then when Oladipo's contract expires next summer, you're going to have to give him a max or he's going to walk, and then you give up your assets for one season of a guy who doesn't really do much for your team in the long run. I mean, like I said, the team would cap out at a sixth seed. That's generous given the landscape of the Western Conference. I'd just rather wait because also, too, I think one thing that's super underrated is draft picks are nice, but trade assets and those picks become nicer when you develop that player past the value of that pick. I mean, a great example we just saw was that Mike Conley trade. You look at it, you're like, oh yeah, the 23rd pick, not the biggest deal. But it also turned into Brandon Clark, who is far more valuable than most 23 overall picks, if that makes sense.
I jumped out of my seat almost when you referenced the Toronto Raptors. And before we go into our next break, Joe, I'll get your opinion on this as well. Joe, I talked with you a little bit about, you know, in the first segment about what positions the Grizzlies the best to be a title contender in the future. And as Parker mentioned, I really think that that's kind of the route that makes sense for them. They develop just incredible depth. They develop, you know, where they've got a hoard of assets in place, and then they strike as kind of that, you know, a really go for it that year type move like Toronto did with Kawhi. I really could see the Grizzlies going that route perhaps multiple times, you know, in the next decade. That seems to me to be an ideal way for this team to really position themselves to be a title contender in the future. Would you agree?
For the most part, I do think that in the case of Victor Oladipo in particular, going back to the previous comment from Parker, I don't see him being as expensive to get as people expect. He's an expiring contract, as Parker alluded to. He's coming off of an injury. I think that if you could get Victor Oladipo for, you know, things that aren't going to hurt you long term, I think you'd make that bite and you try to be as competitive as you can be and show Jaw and Jaren that you're trying to win. But I, in general, I agree with the idea that you don't you're not winning a championship with Victor Oladipo. That's not going to happen. So is that worth sacrificing any asset at all? And I think that's a fair point. I think that whenever you're trying to win a championship, modeling your system after the way that Masai Ujiri does something is probably a good way to do it. He's the best GM in the entire NBA. And you're exactly right. They were poised to take advantage of a situation. And I think that when you look at how Zach Kleiman and that group has built this Grizzlies organization to this point, they have done similar things. They took advantage of the Golden State Warriors not wanting to lose Kevin Durant for nothing. And they stole essentially a first round pick from them at a time when Steph Curry and Klay Thompson are going to be in their mid to late 30s, you know, in 2024. They took that pick just to take on the money of Andre Iguodala. That giving them that asset is extremely valuable. And I think that they're going to continue to put themselves into position where they can take advantage of teams like that. Whether it is a superstar player or not, that remains to be seen, because you want to make sure that it's a guy that's under contract for several years, or it's a young player like Donovan Mitchell going back to that contract control, that he's entering restricted free agency and you can match a deal and keep him for an extended period of time. I don't know that it's worth striking to get, hypothetically speaking, you know, I guess maybe a comparable type of guy would be James Harden for Houston. You know, say the last year of James Harden's contract, the Rockets are bad. They want to rebuild. Memphis is there and they send all these assets to Houston and they think James Harden's going to make them a championship contender. You know, I don't know that for 1 year it makes sense to do that kind of thing for Memphis in particular. I think that's a big swing to take for a market like the Grizzlies. But at the same time, I think something along those lines, putting themselves in position to have the flexibility to do a variety of things and not kind of pigeonhole themselves into one path. That is being a good GM in the NBA, is allowing yourself the wiggle room to, you know, kind of pivot and move in a different direction if necessary. And credit to the Grizzlies front office, that's exactly where they're at. They can go in one way, another. They have all sorts of different avenues towards improving this team moving forward. And one of them could be that. I just don't know. Like I said, my goal in any trade moving forward, and obviously this will increase the price, is making sure that it's somebody that's under contract, or somebody that's in that restricted free agency avenue or space, so that they can stay for an extended period of time. A one-year rental, they're almost assuredly gone. And I don't know that that makes sense given the assets that they – and what they had to give up to acquire the assets. You know, you moved on from Mike Conley. You moved on from the opportunity to have cap space in 2019. You did all sorts of these different things to get to where you wanted to be. Don't just sacrifice that for 1 year of something, especially if you don't think your team's ready to take that leap. Like Oladipo this summer, that would be a mistake, I think. I agree with, you know, being the 6 or 5 seed. And if you have to give up 2 firsts to get Victor Oladipo, you hang up the phone on the Indiana Pacers.
I agree with you completely. You know, we've all three talked about the Toronto as being a model potentially that makes sense. That one thing that's there certainly for Toronto is that they're going to have an easier time recovering, you know, from, you know, if they were to have missed, you know, because they've developed and they can still acquire, you know, potential talents. With us, that is one big thing to look at. If we've got to pay a large price to get that type of talent and say it doesn't work, you know, how easy is it for us to recover? It may not be as easy as it is in other places. Going to take our final break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the traits to potentially add to the Grizzlies' backcourt and how important those traits are going forward for Memphis. Erectile dysfunction. It's not an easy subject to talk about, and a lot of times it's something that definitely many of us would like to avoid. Usually we just brush it off or blame ourselves, saying something like, I lost my mojo, or don't really think much of it at all. We may even avoid it altogether with excuses like, I had a long day at work, or sorry, I'm just not feeling it. But with Roman, it is easy to talk about it. With a real healthcare professional who can prescribe real medication, it's simple, safe, and totally discreet. With Roman, you can get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for erectile dysfunction, all from the comfort and privacy of your own home. A healthcare professional will work with you to find the best treatment plan. If medication is appropriate, Roman will ship it to you with a free 2-day shipping. The whole process is straightforward, simple, and discreet. Getting started is simple. All you got to do is go to roman.com/XXX and complete an online visit. Erectile dysfunction used to be tough to tackle, but now there's Roman. You can go and complete an online visit today and connect with a hair care professional. They can help you take care of it. Go to Roman.com/LockedOnNBA today. If approved, you'll get $15 off your first order of ED treatment. That's GetRoman.com/LockedOnNBA. GetRoman.com/LockedOnNBA. And if approved, you'll get $15 off your order from Roman. So, Parker, you and I had a conversation. I wrote a piece recently about Grizzly Bear Blues about the bench, about how I think that it is a very big asset in support of the development of the starting lineup going forward. And you and I and Joe and others, we talked about the construction of that bench. And you brought up a point that, I think makes a ton of sense, is that whenever it comes to roster decisions going forward, the ability to shoot is going to have extreme value, maybe the biggest value that's there. The question that I have is this, is that you are exactly right. One of the biggest traits that stands out about this Grizzlies team, and it's expected, it's fine that it's the case. The Grizzlies had the lowest percentage of pull-up three-point shots in the league this year. They had the lowest percentage. They made 29% of their pull-up three-point shooting. And so with that in mind, this roster just doesn't have, just a ton of shooting potential in my opinion, but they still, we're locked with them. A lot of this roster is locked in place. So do you feel that the pull-up shooting ability of any additions, do you feel that that's the one trait that really stands out when it comes to looking to add pieces to this team going forward?
I just think three-point shooting in general would be nice. I also just think, I don't even just pull up three-point shooting, just pull up shooting in general would be nice. I mean, as we saw guys like Donovan Mitchell and Jamal Murray, for example, ball out in the bubble and really destroyed teams off the dribble and even in the mid-range. I think that's important. It's important for John Morant's skill set and his trajectory going forward. And I think it's going to be important in finding his backcourt mate. That's one thing I like about Dylan Brooks too, is he can create off the dribble. He can shoot up in the mid range, and he can be an asset in it when he's not on his shit a little bit. I don't know if I'm about to cuss on here, Sean, but that's just the bottom line with it. When Dylan Brooks is not being bad Dylan Brooks, he's a good mid range threat. But I just think 3-point shooting in general is gonna be important. I feel like a lot of the offense, whether it's John Morant orchestrating it or Tyus Jones or even Justice Winslow orchestrating the offense, it's going to be important to have shooters ready to fire. And that's something that I think you quote tweeted my tweets about Tyus Jones's catch and shoot after yes. December 1st, how he shot 44%, and the only players that shot better than him as catch and shoot players were like Seth Curry, JJ Redick, Duncan Robinson, Michael Porter Jr., Grayson Allen. And the fact that the Grizzlies have 44 plus catch and shoot 3-point shooters, outstanding. That's something we haven't seen before. But I just think it's going to be important for the system going forward, since they rely a lot on that drive and kick. Very Miami-esque in that way, by the way, where they try to draw defenses in with playmakers that can finish inside the paint, like Tyus Jones with his floater, or John Morant with his whatever he does. I mean, he can dunk on someone, he can have that floater, he can just straight up finish at the rim. And they try to draw defenses in with that. And then next thing you know, you have a wide open Jaren Jackson Jr. three or a wide open Grayson Allen three. And I just think going forward, that's what you need to prioritize. And that's why I like the 2021 offseason, in particular with targeting guys like Duncan Robinson and OG Anunoby.
And Joe, talking about the other, piece to that equation that comes into it, in developing that shooting, the thing about the Heat and other teams that have been there in the playoffs now is their ability to develop that shooting, on the fly and out of nowhere. Duncan Robinson, nobody expected for him coming into this season to be this elite of a shooter. Your favorite player in the NBA, Jay Crowder, his improvement when it comes to three-pointers going from Memphis to Miami. All joking aside, though, looking at Taylor Jenkins, both in terms of his schematics and setting up good shooting opportunities for his players and his ability to develop the shooting ability from distance of his players, did you see that type of potential in him to develop that in multiple ways to increase the overall level of shooting on this Grizzlies team as time goes forward?
I think Taylor Jenkins is a good coach, but anybody that says that they think he can develop a three-point shooter at this stage, that's just wishful thinking. I think that's possible. I'm not going to say it's unlikely. And obviously they've made some changes to their assistant coaching staff already this offseason, and we'll have to see how those will flesh out. But, I mean, Jay Crowder was awful as a three-point shooter for the Memphis Grizzlies. He shot 29.3% from three. And while I'm recording this podcast, I get notifications that Jay Crowder makes three threes in the first quarter of the NBA Finals. That never would have happened in Memphis. Never. Like, never, ever would that have happened. So I do think there's something to coaching in terms of organizing scheme, in terms of developing a culture, going back to the previous segment. And people talk about that Heat culture a lot. And I do think that that's really important in the absence of elite-level talent. Like, if you're not L.A., and you're not able to get LeBron James and Anthony Davis on your roster through trades and free agency, then you have to put yourself in a spot to build what it means to be a member of the Miami Heat in that particular case. And again, Jimmy Butler's a great player, but it's not like any of those other guys. You know, the next best player on that team is Bam Adebayo, and he's an all-star, but he's not a superstar. He's not somebody that's this elite player that you would say he's a top 10 player in the NBA. He might be top 20 or top 25, but he's not Kevin Durant. He's not Steph Curry. He's not even Klay Thompson. So I think that when you are looking at what the model that Memphis needs to take, we talked about Toronto in the last segment. Miami's another good example. They're not going to be a place, even more so than Toronto and Miami, that people are going to want to come and stay because of the market. That's just being realistic. The Grizzlies had to overpay Chandler Parsons to get him to come to Memphis. They had to give him a max contract. They're not getting a max deal guy when they can choose between Memphis and Toronto and Miami. It's just not going to happen. So if they are looking at a way to try to build this thing shooting-wise, it needs to be done from, you know, within, obviously, and I think that Taylor Jenkins deserves some time on that front. But I also don't think it's coincidental that, you know, these guys go to these other teams and they take off as shooters. Well, I think with Jay Crowder, it's kind of coincidental because he's terrible as a three-point shooter. But in terms of the overall aspect of scheme, to me, that matters more than the culture, or it matters about the same. I guess they go hand in hand, excuse me. The idea of building what it means to be a Memphis Grizzly, the way that we play the game, the way that we attack our opponents, the way that we swing the basketball, you know, all that kind of adds up. And that's something that can't be established in 1 year. I mean, Spoelstra has been with the Heat for how long now? I mean, he coached LeBron 13 years. Yeah. So, I mean, that's something that happens over time and, you know, it can't be done overnight. And one of the nice things about the way that they're building the Grizzlies is they have the potential for Taylor Jenkins to be that Spoelstra type of coach if he has the chops to do it. And I think, at least through 1 year, he's shown that he could, and he probably does. But he definitely needs to prioritize that internal development because the time is going to come here in the next few years where they're going to be capped out, and the team is going to be the team. And if they think it's the Anthony Melton, Melton's a great example. Like, if you think Melton can develop a shot, it's on you to develop his shot because right now he can't shoot the three. If you want him to get up to 35% or so and be a functional three-point shooter, that's going to be an internal development thing and how you help him grow. If there's not a plan for that, then you need to move on from Melton so that you have the capacity to sign somebody that you already know has that skill in their arsenal.
And so before we get to the final question before for Parker and Joe, Parker, I've got some bad news. So you cussed the last time I talked to you. That's a 1 month suspension from the show. You've also... You also have tweeted about Tyler Hero for the 15th time, including while you're on the show with me and Joe, and you haven't mentioned Brandon Clark once. So that's another 2 months. That's a full quarter of the year that you're suspended from the show. I'm kidding. All joking aside, Parker, you mentioned it. You referenced the tweet, and I've looked at it as well. There's encouraging signs from names such as Grayson Allen. I feel Justice Winslow. I know he's not the guard, but still he plays the wing. But if, particularly Grayson Allen and Tyus Jones, there were improvements this year on their ability to shoot from distance, catch and shoot, pull up, things such as that. So I do think that one thing, you know, we talked about Joe mentioned that Taylor Jenkins does deserve some time to develop these players, but I think that that's critical. in that, you know, we know that our bench is efficient. We know that Brandon Clarke and Tyus Jones, you know, can elevate the level of the play from players that play with them. But that's a very critical thing, in your opinion, don't you think, that they continue to build on their shooting ability? Do you feel both Jones and Grayson Allen can be significantly better shooters than they are now, given the time to develop?
Better shooters than they are now? I doubt it, because, I mean, it's also because they're at a really good level. I mean, Tyus Jones was like a between 44 and 49% three-point shooter after December 1st. I mean, that first month of the season was kind of an albatross, and really just I don't really count that because he was getting used to a new system. And same with Grayson Allen. I think he finishes a 40% three-point shooter. I think that's about what he will be at going forward. But anything's possible. I mean, as we've seen in the NBA, seen with the Grizzlies, I mean, nobody thought that we would be finishing the 2019-20 season a year after media day for the season itself. So anything's possible. But I do think it would come down to adding one more playmaker, I believe, in that second unit, whether it's Dylan Brooks moving to the second unit or Justice Winslow moving into the second unit, or what I wrote about on GBB a couple months ago about Brandon Clarke becoming more of a playmaker, kind of in the similar mold of like a Millsap or Siakam, to where he can average about like 3 assists a night. I think that would do a lot to generate open looks and raise the three-point level for Grayson and Tyus. That's where I'm at. I think if they could just add more playmakers, and I know that's Coach Jenkins's bread and butter. That's one of the things he'll talk about in his post-game, pre-game press conferences, is playmaking. So I think it just all comes down to how the team's built going forward.
Agreed. I do think that, you know, if they did show the ability, that secondary playmakers, the overall idea is to get them, you know, is the frequency of the shots that they take. And if you can increase that by a few a game, I think that can make a big difference, especially, you know, when the secondary units are on the court. Joe, one other trait besides shooting, you know, we all agree that shooting probably is very important. But in terms of Jaw and in terms of this unit, you know, together, Melton is a very good defensive player. He's a good defensive playmaker. You know, his playmaking rates, especially in steals, are quite impressive compared to the rest of the NBA since his time, you know, in the league. But I do think that that continues to need to be a focus as well, with, you know, within reason. I don't think that you really can survive with a Tony Allen type player in today's NBA that much. But defense is quite important when it comes to, you know, pairing, you know, the backcourt with Jaw. Jaw should have decent defensive potential himself. But don't you agree that defense should be the focus when it comes to really finding a running mate with Jaw eventually in time?
Absolutely, because Jaw's usage rate is always going to be extremely high. The offense is always going to go through Jaw Morant, and it has to. In order for them to be successful, that drive and kick offense only works if you have the drive part down first, and that's going to be Ja Morant's job. So if you are so dependent on Ja as an offensive playmaker, you're exactly right. You need that defensive playmaker for him to run with, and it doesn't need to be their main skill, but they need to have that capacity. I guess part of it could be, do you see the Grizzlies and Melton in particular, do you see him being of that Marcus Smart ilk? You know, that's been a comparison that's been made. Can Melton be that for Memphis? And I think yes and no, because there's a yes in terms of the skill set. I think that Melton can be that level of player compared to Marcus Smart. But on the flip side, I think for Memphis, something that's so important, and we talked about it a little bit earlier, is developing that culture, right? You know, if Ja Morant is going to be the Jimmy Butler, if we're going to use that Heat comparison, if Morant's going to be the butler who helps establish that culture and what it means to be a member of the organization, and obviously Jaren Jackson Jr. is kind of the buddy cop sequel movie, kind of the good cop to Jaw's bad, maybe. I think that you have to have a guy there who's tenacious. And I think anytime that you see, clearly the Grizzlies have a type, right? They're going after guys that are self-made. They're going after guys that, especially in the draft with Jaw and Brandon, then even bringing in John Conchar on the two-way contract, they're looking for players that had to work to get where they are, that blue-collar mentality. They they have skill and athleticism, obviously, but they also were overlooked. They have a chip on their shoulder. And I think that that is a trait that they can need to continue to feed into, because that's how you build a culture. You get a bunch of like-minded people together that want to accomplish a goal, and they improve and they push each other. And that's how you grow into a winner into a champion, through that type of buy-in and that willingness to do that together. And again, they don't have to, you know, think exactly the same, but they have to have a common way of approaching the game of basketball or any sport or whatever the endeavor is. It can be a business. There needs to be some sort of, this is how we do things around here. And I think that existed with the grit and grind era to an extent. And I think that that can certainly exist and perhaps even be more explosive, because none of those grit and grind guys were a superstar. John Morant's going to be a superstar. And if you can have that guy leading both the charge on the court and in the locker room, that's extremely valuable. But you need to have like-minded people around him. You can't go out and get, just off the top of my head. I guess I can't think of anybody off the top of my head, but there's players around the NBA that you watch them play and you think, wow, he would not fit next to John Morant. It has nothing to do with the way that he plays in terms of his skill. He might be a 45% three-point shooter, but just the way that he, you know, maybe James Harden is a good example of that. You know, whether it's being ball dominant, whether it's just the way that he plays the game itself, the way he carries himself, you want to find good fits. There has to be good fits both in terms of play and playing style, but there also has to be good personality fits. Otherwise, you're going to have issues in the locker room, and it doesn't matter how talented you are. I mean, Philadelphia 76ers are a good example of that, the Utah Jazz to a lesser extent. You know, if you don't have camaraderie and a common purpose and a common passion, and you're able to kind of unite and rally around that, whatever you're able to shoot from three isn't going to matter.
And you mentioned blue-collar mentality, and as we wrap up here, I do want to congratulate both of y'all. Obviously, me being a proud member of the family over at Grizzly Bear Blues, you know, through the past few months, the bubble, great coverage with it, but also the podcast network has certainly taken off. So congratulations to coverage, obviously, as well. Plenty of stuff going on over there. So either Parker or Joe, will start with y'all. First off, congratulations on the success. What things do we have coming up for y'all personally, as well as the site, that folks can be tuned into as we wrap up this calendar year and the NBA fully gets into an unprecedented offseason, it seems?
Parker, do you want to go ahead?
Oh, I was going to let the boss go first.
You go first. I'll close us out.
All right. I mean, right now, I mean, it's going to be a grueling off season. Right now, we will have like a month's worth of coverage on potential free agent targets, potential draft targets, even with the draft targets, whether it's just with the 40th pick or with an additional second round pick, or they're an undrafted rookie that the Grizzlies signed to a two-way. We've got you covered there. We got two podcasts a week. 1 week we'll have Core 4 and 3&D, and then the next we'll have Starting 5 and GPB Live. Excited for the coverage we have with that. I mean, obviously Joe does a terrific job orchestrating GPB Live. He just lets me in for the ride. Nate Chester and I would do good Core Fours as well. Justin Lewis always brings his A game with bringing good guests and conducting great interviews. And then the camaraderie and just the uniqueness of the Starting Five podcast, and just how natural it is. It's almost like you're in the room when you listen to them. You just won't miss anything. You won't want to miss anything when it comes to Grizzly Bear Blues and the Grizzly Bear Blues podcast network.
And we talked about this the other day on our Slack channel, or at least I said it. And I've been with GBB for too damn long at this point, probably. I think 8 years now I've been doing this. And, you know, we've had a lot of very talented people come through our staff. You know, Jonah Jordan writes for the Daily Memphian now. We talked about Matt Hardlicka earlier and his great Patreon page that he does. Up and down, I could spend the next hour talking about all the great folks that I've had a chance to work with. I think this is the deepest our staff has ever been, you know, and we have, you know, Ben Hogan, who's now officially a part of our staff, who used to be the producer for the Eric Castletine show on 92.9 FM ESPN Memphis. Bryce Hayes is an up and coming writer who's done great job with his Grizzlies Versus series. Also weird that I coached him when I was in Memphis, so that makes me feel old. You know, we have all sorts of different talented people. You know, Molly Morrison of Made in Memphis fame interviewed Quincy Pondexter this week, and she's going to be writing an article for us at GBB for Friday that, you know, there's some interesting nuggets in there that haven't necessarily been leaked before involving the Grit and Grind Grizzlies and Quincy's role in what was going on in there. So there's going to be some interesting stuff that goes along with her and the Made in Memphis show. So we are to look at where we were as a blog when I started, and that's no disrespect to Kevin Leip and Chris Faulkner. They were tremendous site managers. But you know, we talk about developing a culture. You two know this, your listeners may not. I'm kind of, and I'll follow Parker on the cursing side here. I'm kind of batshit crazy when it comes to the way that I compete for things. I'm a very competitive person, and I think our greatest competition in life is ourselves. And I'm always looking for ways for us to grow and develop GBB into something bigger and better. And I think that this is truly between the podcast network, between our staff, the content that we provide on a daily basis that's also quality, not just quantity. I take pride in, you know, saying pretty confidently that we are the best source for Grizzlies content there is. And I don't mean that to slight anybody, but I mean, just I don't see anybody able to compete with our quality, our quantity, the way that we do things on a daily basis. It's never been a better time to be a Grizzlies fan because there's so many great outlets out there. But when it comes to consistency of content and quality, I'm proud of what we do on a daily basis. And, you know, that just means a lot to have a group of like-minded people going back to that culture idea. I think we have a lot of folks that care about GBB. I don't think anybody cares about it as much as me, which is probably a good thing. Because like I said, I'm kind of crazy. But at the same time, I think I've been able and fortunate to bring together a group of people that care about the Grizzlies, that care about our site and the community that we've built. And, you know, I think that's my favorite thing is it's not just me. You know, we're a team over there and we're doing a pretty damn good job.
And I'll say this, I had the pleasure of speaking with, you know, fellow GBBer, associate editor, and I know a guy that y'all both hold in really high regard, Brandon Abraham, you know, about the hustle the other day. And it's just amazing. You know, Brandon Smart, for instance, with Grizzlies Gaming, and, you know, myself, I'm not trying to brag. I'm just saying that through my involvement with GBB, you really find a niche. You really find something that, you know, you're passionate about and you're good at when it comes to a perspective of covering the team. And you really develop your, you know, your own voice. And that's what I am so proud that, you know, I have been able to experience myself. You know, I'm not, you know, going to say, I mean, I'm better than anybody else. I'm not. But in general, in terms of seeing so many different people who have done that in so many different ways, that's the biggest thing that I take away. And I thank both of y'all for the opportunity to, you know, be able to do that, as well as, you know, just allowing for others to do that as well. Before we end the show today with Joe Molinax and Parker Fleming, where can they find y'all on Twitter, and where can they in general find the GBB Live podcast?
They can find GBB Live on Twitter at GBB Live. This week's show, we're going to have Keith Parrish of Fast Break Breakfast. He said he would pay Melton whatever it takes to keep him. I know Parker wants to yell at him about that for a little bit, so I'll probably let the young dog hunt a little bit when it comes to that segment. And we're also having my old friend Matt Hardlicka on. He wrote a great post about the Justice Winslow trade and kind of moving forward from that. So you can follow us at GBB Live. You can follow me on Twitter at Joe Molinax, and you can follow our blog, Grizzly Bear Blues, at SBN Grizzlies.
Well, their names are Parker Fleming and Joe Molinax. Guys, thank you so much. If you'll stick with us a little, just for a second after the show, you can find our show, Locked On Grizz, on Twitter, myself at StatsSAC, the podcast, anywhere where podcasts are available. Thank you so much for listening to us, and we'll talk to you again soon here on the Locked On Grizzlies podcast. Welcome to the Locked On Grizzlies podcast. My name is Sean Coleman. Hope wherever you are well and that you had a great weekend. It's the start to another great week. The weather outside is definitely getting more comfortable and just enjoyable. A lot of things going on. Baseball playoffs are in full swing. The NBA finals are in full swing. The Heat Basically pulling off a needed victory, obviously, last night. I mean, a great performance, a historic performance, legendary performance, if you would, for Jimmy Butler and Kelly Olynyk really stepping in place with a couple of prominent Heat players out of the equation in Adebayo and Dragic. But they made it a series now. The Lakers, likely, it was a wake-up call they needed. They're probably still going to win in 5 or 6 games. The Heat certainly showed, as they have all postseason, that they are here for a reason, and they are ready to play and have now made it a series. Before we get into the show today, I do want to remind you, you can find the show at Locked On Grizz on Twitter, myself at StatsSAC, and you can also find the podcast wherever podcasts are available, Spotify, Stitcher, the podcast app on your iPhone, wherever you choose to listen. We also want to remind you to subscribe, review, ask questions, interact with us via Twitter or wherever it may be. Let us know if you have any questions. We want to always make sure that our content is relevant to our listeners' preferences. Also want to remind you of our title sponsor, Built Bar. If you go to BuiltBar.com right now and put in the promo code Locked On, you can get $10 off your next order. So I wanted to start a new series. A couple weeks ago, we did a series in which we talked with names around the Locked On Podcast Network, getting kind of an off-season insight into the Grizzlies' rivals. Well, now I want to focus back on the Grizzlies, and in my opinion, probably the most important group, probably the most important part of the Grizzlies' roster is their backcourt. What names could be on the move? What names could we see develop? Who do we really feel is critical to the future of the Grizzlies, to the success of the Grizzlies' future when it comes to playing alongside Ja Morant? And for that, I am very happy to welcome two folks who I think are prominent names among Grizzlies media, and that's the Grizzly Bear Blues leadership, Parker Fleming and Joe Molinax. They've been on the show with us before, and we're so glad to welcome them back. Joe, how are you doing this evening?